From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just last night in Rochester. A young man felt seriously ill and was worried enough about his health to go to the doctor, or at least he thought he probably should see a doctor. He was dealing with nausea and intense stomach pain. Could it be food poisoning? Had he ruptured his appendix? Was it something else? But this young man decided not to go. He's a transgender male. He fears the process of going to see the doctor, and it is a common confrontational problem in the transgender community. Have you thought about this before? Serious disparities in healthcare and outcomes for the LGBTQ community at large. If you're a heterosexual adult, you're more likely to have health insurance. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community, you're more likely to not get the prescriptions you need or see the doctor when you should. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community, you're likely to use the emergency department for healthcare. Why? Well, we've touched on one reason already, but there are more. Trillium Health is trying to eliminate these disparities by offering what they call culturally competent care. This hour, we're going to talk about what that means. We're going to talk about the Health Quality Index. We'll talk about social determinants of health. And the White Party, they've got coming up here, which is a big event for them as they try to continue their outreach and eliminating these disparities. So let me go ahead and welcome our guest for the hour. Dr. Bill Valenti is here, Senior Vice President and Chief of Innovation at Trillium Health. Dr. Valenti, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Emily Jones is here, a community advocate and a friend of Trillium Health. Emily, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Graham Brown is here, the co-chair of the White Party and healthcare consultant. Graham, welcome to you.
Good afternoon.
And Cody Gardner is a community engagement liaison with the Rochester Victory Alliance. He's also going to talk about the patient perspective in this discussion. Cody, welcome to you as well.
Thanks.
Dr. Valenti, you know, we've talked about disparities in healthcare among the wealthy and the poor in this country. But when we talk about the heterosexual community against the LGBTQ community, not to pit one against the other, but some of the numbers that you see, some of the disparities are really moving. And I think about communities that don't have a Trillium Health among them, and I wonder if they're even more severe. What do you think?
Yeah, there are people who stay away from healthcare for a lot of reasons, insurance, stigma, not being able to relate well to the healthcare system in general. We try and overcome the barriers to help get people in the door and get hooked up to healthcare. And we spent a lot of time doing this since 2012 when we launched this formal program. We've always been what we call culturally competent since our early days as an HIV program. So we
were- You have, Trillium has.
Trillium has. That's been a part of the mantra since the very beginning. What we've done is expand that to include a more organized approach to LGBTQ health.
Okay. And, you know, Emily, I think it probably is as good a time as any to talk about what a health equality index is, sort of in the context of this conversation here. And I know that's something that you wanted to talk about. So I want to talk about that in just one second. But what has brought a lot of us together today is the fact that there's a big party coming up. Bill, I'll start with you. What's coming up?
The White Party, Saturday, June 11th, Academy of Medicine, the fourth annual White Party to help support our patient care fund.
And that is 9 days from now. And Graham, can you tell us a little bit about what the party's all about?
Yes, the party brings together really the gay, lesbian community, healthcare providers in the community, allies and supporters who want to lend their support to Trillium's efforts to improve their patient care fund. And I think Dr. Valenti will speak a little bit more about that fund, but it's really important from a community perspective to recognize that not all care that's required in a clinical environment is paid for. And there's a lot of care that Trillium provides that isn't compensated. And for them to do that effectively, they utilize the patient care fund to ensure that they can provide those services to people that need them. In a way that's time and appropriate and gives them access to care and surrounds them with the type of services they need, and that's what this fundraiser is all about.
So this is going to bolster that fund, and its tickets are $100. The VIP tickets are sold out, I'm reading. So $100 tickets still available that you can get now. Where can you get them, by the way? Tickets are available where?
TrilliumHealth.org. That's Trillium with two L's.
Okay, TrilliumHealth.org. And Graham, I'm just looking down the list of what's going on there. It's obviously music, plenty of food, looks like sort of a roaring 20s party theme. But anything else you want to mention there?
No, I think, you know, as Dr. Valenti was saying, this is the fourth annual White Party. The White Party themselves have a long tradition in the gay and lesbian community as a rallying cry and symbol during the HIV and AIDS movement to create a new direction and to really bring about a common cause. And so that White Party theme is continued here, and Trillium is, you know, a great organization. We're really valued, or very valued part of our healthcare delivery system here. And I think an important event for us to all support. So look forward to having other attendees and listeners join us.
Dr. Valenti, that fund that it's bolstering then serves, we've begun to touch on it, but what's the value for the community?
What the value is that it keeps people healthier for longer and helps engage people in healthcare and also overcomes some of the financial barriers to getting care. For example, high deductible insurance plans helps get that started, and right down to housing, because housing is healthcare. And if you don't have a place, stable housing or a place to stay, it's going to be difficult to take your medicine, keep your appointments, do those kinds of things. So we help with a very broad range of services to engage and keep people in care.
I'm looking at some of the numbers of active patients at Trillium from your 2015 annual report. Pretty big numbers. I don't know, do you have a target number that you need for this fund? Is it sort of as much as you can raise, you can help?
As much as we can raise. Everything helps if when we start to run low, we go out and ask people for money.
So this is the big one here.
This is really important.
All right, so the White Party, you can check out more at trilliumhealth.org. It is 9 days from now, Saturday, June 11th, and let's talk a little bit more about the Health Equality Index. And Emily Jones, who's a community advocate, wants to do that. First of all, what is it, Emily?
So it's a benchmarking tool that was created by the Human Rights Campaign to evaluate, basically, a health care facility with respect to their policies and practices when it comes to LGBTQ people, also visitors and employees. As you mentioned earlier, you were talking about the transgender person that didn't know where to go to get care. Where are the welcoming and affirming health care practices in Rochester? So if you went to the Human Rights Campaign and looked up the Health Equality Index, you would find there are 5 facilities in this area. There's the Trillium, there's the Strong Memorial, there's the VA Canandaigua Health Facility, HCR Home Care went through a very, very long process of getting their team culturally competent in this area, and there's also Buffalo Medical. So if people wanted to find out, like this transgender individual wanted to find out where he or she could get good care, competent care, could look on the internet and find that. And so people can start seeing where these facilities are and where the people are that can take care of them.
That comes from the Human Rights Campaign?
Human Rights Campaign.
Do you know how they make that determination, whether a hospital meets that criteria or not?
In the same way they have the Corporate Equality Index, they have a Health Equality Index. And they have 4 criteria that they measure in the same way they do the Corporate Equality Index. They talk to the individual institutions. The institutions have to send them their policies, their practices, the benefits for their employees. They have to have a non-discrimination policy, both for their employees and for their patients. So they also have to do complete staff training across the LGBTQ cultural competency spectrum.
How do most hospitals do? Do we have any idea nationwide? Is the average hospital getting this rating yet? I mean, and my guess is it's a big difference from 10 years ago, 5 years ago, today, Emily.
It's a huge.
Yeah.
10 years ago, there may have been less than 50. Today, there are 496. They surveyed over 2,000 different hospitals and facilities. New York has actually, New York State has 72, one of the largest number of competent care facilities.
Dr. Valenti, has your relationship with the broader medical community changed over the years in this regard? In other words, patients who come to you in Trillium, are you more comfortable with them in the broader medical community now than you were decades ago?
Well, I think we still have a ways to go with that. If you look at frequency of HIV testing is one measure, and also look at referrals or sexual history taking. So there's more education to be done. We work at the County Medical Society on these things to try and get the word out. State Medical Society is on board. It's a matter of getting the word out and helping people feel comfortable with LGBTQ patients. And have to remember, from where I sit, there are many, many other demands on physicians, practices, and clinics and hospitals these days, so that it's important to state the case, state it briefly, be consistent and out there. And we're working on it. And we think that by having a central place where people can go, that begins to be a referral source for patients and providers. And hopefully if we can enhance our educational efforts in this, we can also get the word out to other docs in the community.
Okay. Well, let me ask for the patient perspective then. Cody Gardner is a community engagement liaison with the Rochester Victory Alliance, which is what, by the way?
Rochester Victory Alliance is a research unit at the University of Rochester Medical Center, and we look at new kinds of biomedical prevention research when it comes to HIV and AIDS. So we study HIV vaccines, and we also do, right now we're looking at antibody-mediated prevention, which is a special antibody that may be able to protect against HIV in humans.
Okay. When it comes to that patient perspective, then, I don't want to ask too broadly because, you know, you can't speak for every person is different. Every person has different motivations on why they do or do not seek care. But let me just start with a general question. How do you see the patient perspective in this conversation, Cody?
Well, I think I was asked here because of my background in community engagement, at least with the Victory Alliance. And one of the things that I appreciate so much about Trillium Health and one of the unique things about Trillium is their presence in the community and their involvement in the community with sponsorships, seeing the doctors and providers at community events so our community, our LGBT community, can connect with them, can feel a relationship with them and create relationships, which so often members of the LGBT community just they don't have or they don't feel that connection. One of the hardest things to do as a patient at any medical practice is to come out as gay or bi or trans or queer. And it is so critical that these conversations happen in when you're with your doctor, because there are so many things that the doctor can do to help you stay safe sexually, hepatitis shots, A and B, and sort of extra care that can be given to LGBT patients if their providers are familiar with who they are as a person.
So is it fair to say then one of the most important first steps is just a feeling of safety, a feeling of...
Absolutely. And one of the things that Trillium does is they own their place in the LGBT community. You go there knowing it is going to be a welcoming place and that it is normalized to be LGB or T when you speak with your provider.
Do you get the sense that that is, you know, that scenario, that feeling of safety is making its way to other medical institutions? It's not just a Trillium anymore, or do you feel differently?
Personally, I think we're very lucky to have Trillium in this community because I don't see it so often with other medical practices. My network extends to Syracuse as well, and there are some resources there for LGBT people, but to the extent that we have here in Rochester, it's really unparalleled with extended testing hours, you know, after hours, and the innovation that goes on at Trillium and the willingness to innovate with taking patients out of normal hours, meeting up with them, sending nurses to give them treatments, like when they're not open, for example, treatments for different STDs are things that are unique to Trillium. And Trillium is uniquely positioned because they are relatively small compared to some of our other medical centers. They have created these relationships with their patients, and they're able to tackle these issues when they arise. So I think we're very lucky and privileged to have Trillium in our community supporting the LGBT community.
Dr. Valenti, you certainly don't have to name any names, but have you had patients over the years who've told you they felt judged or worse when they had discussions with doctors and other institutions? They felt that? Yeah.
We see that from time to time. People transfer their care to us and feel more comfortable. I think the idea, though, is we don't necessarily need to corner the market. We certainly want to be a resource at Trillium, but would also like to help our colleagues out there in the community with being comfortable with sexual health issues, sexual history taking, know where the referral sources are, and as an absolute minimum in my infectious diseases world is you don't need to do HIV care, but we'd like you to feel comfortable doing HIV testing and offering it to everybody between according to the state law. So yeah, we can be a resource or we can be a focal point, but the idea is to also continue to help my colleagues feel comfortable with LGBT people, just to get them in the door.
Is it fair to say that the transgender community, above all, faces some stress and barriers when it comes to medical health and medical care?
Yes, and I'll speak to my own experience on that. Before we launched our LGBT formal health program in 2012, I was in the dark as well. We've always had transgender patients at Trillium and in our legacy organizations. But once we opened the doors, began to get out there in the community and do some outreach and marketing, learned that the need was really far greater than even I appreciated. To the point today where we are offering transgender people hormone therapy as a part of our treatment and are working out an arrangement with the University of Rochester Medical Center where we will do surgical evaluations and consultations, not surgery, but the consultations on our site with this joint activity. So we've come a long way, but I can tell you if you had talked to me 4 years ago, it would have been an entirely different conversation. So I can understand how transgender people are sometimes underappreciated.
Emily, I saw you nodding when I asked if the biggest challenge is for the transgender community. Why so?
We've been recently working with the transgender community on their whole care. I've been working with Dr. Valenti and also with HCR Home Care to develop a conversation, basically, with LGBTQ patients about what it's like to be an LGBTQ patient. What are the issues? What do you need? What do you face? What are you concerned with? Dr. Valenti was really gracious in hosting two of these conversations where we had about 15 LGBTQ patients and about 20 physicians, nurses, people who actually were home caregivers, people who taught in university to docs that might be taking care of people in the LGBTQ community. What emerged was basically that there was no training in the university setting. Some do now. University of Rochester has started to step up significantly. I do know that Rochester Regional Health has recently done some grand rounds in transgender health care, but it's very, very minimal. But the biggest issue for the transgender community has been with their mental health care people. They feel very strongly that they have to educate they're mental health professionals. So we've had two of these conversations with just trans people and mental health care providers, having the trans people share what their issues are when they are in their care, because they want to be cared for, but yet what they're doing, they feel mostly, is educating them on what it's like to be a trans person. Now at Trillium, they have created comprehensive care. They have mental health professionals on board. They have behavioral health people. They have people that will manage the cases in the broadest extent, including, as Dr. Valenti said, both food and housing. So this is huge. You know, they understand what it means to be a trans person. This is very difficult for most everybody to understand, because not many people know trans people, nor have they walked in their shoes.
And when it comes to the impact of the White Party, which again, tickets are on sale now for the Saturday, June 11th White Party from 7 to 9 at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. That's on East Avenue. It's the fourth annual party that raises money for the Patient Care Fund. Dr. Valenti, that Patient Care Fund, when you talk about healthcare access for all, we know that transgender Americans are more likely to be unemployed or discriminated against. And we also know, obviously, if you're more likely to be unemployed, you're more likely to be suffering with poverty or access to insurance and other things. So my guess is all those things are interrelated, and that's why the Patient Care Fund, especially for the transgender community, is important.
Right. It extends our reach so that we can remember the transgender people, like a lot of LGBT people, African-Americans and racial and ethnic minorities have been invisible in a lot of ways, in a lot of places in our society. So this is just another population significantly underserved, and allows us to, overcome barriers to not only get people in the door and into care, but engage them and retain them in care so that they have some primary care and we can meet their needs and follow them over the long haul.
178 transgender people served by Trillium Health in the 2015 report. 178 would have been what 10 years ago, Dr. Valenti?
One.
Really?
A very small number. Yeah. 10 years ago, people tend to be invisible, go out of town for care, or don't get it. That's the thing. See, people who are marginalized or invisible stay away. They don't get care for lots of reasons. It's a financial issue, insurance issue, discrimination, stigma. All of those things keep populations away from care.
And should we be, Cody Gardner, again, from sort of the patient perspective, should we be encouraged that number might have been 110 years ago and now it's 178? That's a significant change.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's moving in the right direction, certainly. And Trillium is, in our community, is a force behind that. I see it as, and they really do a wonderful job partnering with other organizations as well, not just other medical practices, but research organizations like I work for at the University of Rochester, in sort of trying to tackle the issues that face the LGBT community kind of on all fronts, namely HIV and HIV prevention, but other ways as well. I know they have created a space where LGBT people can go to get a number of their issues addressed, their whole selves addressed, if you will, with mental health care, with a pharmacy on site, with a lab on site, in addition to the primary care that they seek.
And Trillium is trying to do more. They want to increase emphasis on women's health. We're talking about, as Cody and others have mentioned, expanding the services to building a family medicine program. Let's get our only break for the hour. When we come back, I want to talk about social determinants of health. I want to talk about trauma. People in the LGBTQ community much more likely to have experienced trauma. And trauma means a lot of different things, obviously. But we'll talk about how that impacts possible health care. And remind you that you can get tickets now, trilliumhealth.org, if you want to go to the 2016 White Party, their fourth annual party. That's two Saturdays from now. And it is not just for the LGBTQ community. Graham Brown, you used an important word that I hear a lot more of these days, which is allies. You got a lot of allies who come to this party, don't you?
Indeed, we do. And it's, you know, a great community fundraiser beyond just the people that we're trying to care for with Trillium Health. It's really about the community overall coming together to support a great organization.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour and come back and talk about social determinants of health, trauma, and more as Trillium and their friends here on this panel work to build a more inclusive healthcare community. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Oh, technology. I meant before we cut off our tees to tell you that there's a lot coming up tomorrow. There's a lot coming up every weekday on Connections. And there's Weekend Connections, the podcast now, in case you miss any of it. But I will tell you what's coming up tomorrow. In the first hour, you might have seen the story that we discovered proof of aliens. Maybe, probably not, but maybe. It's the most mysterious star in the galaxy. And the person who helped lead the research team that discovered it, her name's Tabitha Boyajian. She's going to be on the program. I am absolutely stoked for this conversation because this is the first time we've discovered what might be a Dyson sphere or a Dyson swarm. If you've never heard of that, look it up and then listen in the first hour tomorrow. That is going to be a lot of fun. In our second hour tomorrow, we're talking to members of the Asian American community, what they think about the president's recent trip to Hiroshima, and you'll even hear from some World War II veterans on that. The president saying that he wants to increase cultural understanding and build bridges there, and obviously some people didn't appreciate it, and many others did, so we're going to talk about that in our second hour tomorrow. That's what's coming up tomorrow on Connections. What's coming up right now, we're talking to folks about the LGBTQ community's healthcare, and we're talking about what Trillium has been doing to increase access and outreach. Dr. Bill Valenti is here. He's the Senior Vice President and Chief of Innovation at Trillium Health. Graham Brown's the co-chair of their upcoming White Party. He's a healthcare consultant. Emily Jones, a community advocate and a friend of Trillium Health, who's been talking to us about the Health Equality Index. And Cody Gardner is a community engagement liaison with the Rochester Victory Alliance, talking about the patient perspective for healthcare in the LGBTQ community. Graham Brown is the someone who I think not just co-chairing the party. The party's fun, but we can talk a lot more than just the party. Social determinants of health. How do we define that, first of all? I know you wanted to talk about what a social determinant of health is. How do you define it?
Yeah. Social determinants of health are really all of those care issues that people experience in their lives that may kind of lead them on one path to a good or bad health outcome. It's really about the decisions we make, and it's the decisions we make as social beings. So it covers things like whether we exercise, the kinds of foods we eat, whether those are healthy, what we have in terms of knowledge about the care that we need or our health status, how educated are we. It's our access to care. It's the community in which we live and whether that's a safe environment. It's whether we use alcohol or drugs or tobacco or other things that may jeopardize our health in one way or another. And so it's really all of those environmental factors. And I think what's important here for us to think about with regard to those social determinants of health is, in fact, those are often non-medical issues, but not managing those aspects of who we are can drive a huge amount of healthcare cost. So the work that I do as a healthcare consultant across the U.S. is really around population health and trying to look at large groups of patients and health systems and communities collaborate to create programs that recognize that whole individual and how it isn't at the end of the day just the doctor's role to solve everything that might be going on for that person. We really need to understand that person individually, what all of their unique care needs, and the social environment in which they live. And then as an organization, just as Trillium Health has done, really create those connections across the different providers of care, whether those are social providers of care or clinical providers of care, to make sure that there is that network and that referral base around which we can address the care needs of the people that we're trying to serve.
I want to take a listener question, and I want to direct it to Graham and then the rest of the panel here, because it kind of piggybacks on what we're talking about here. And listeners, you can find us on Twitter, as Stephen did. I'll read his comment in a second. It's at Evan Dawson or our producer, Megan Mack, at MMACMedia on Twitter. Or you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, particularly if you're a member of the LGBTQ community. How have you experienced healthcare in our region? Stephen says to us, education on this subject is necessary, though occasionally expensive. Is there a future where understanding is ingrained, a generation that gets it, that doesn't require this kind of work? And let me ask a consultant, you're a good person to start with, Graham, but I think that's a good question, don't you?
I think it is. And I think, you know, this really builds on some of the points that Emily was making earlier. There are nascent programs within medical training programs at the universities across the country that are really trying to help residents and new students understand the particular unique challenges that the LGBT and queer community might be experiencing in their care and provide some of that social context to not only their social issues and how they interact with the healthcare system and clinicians, but also what their social situation is and how that may prevent them from accessing care in one way or another. So I think we're starting in the direction of incorporating some of these aspects into the education of clinical providers, both in nursing and in medical education physician programs. But those are kind of getting underway. As we see universities develop more population health programs, and they're looking really at cohorts of population, whether that's people with a particular illness burden like diabetes and how do you care for diabetics, or whether it's a particular segment of a population from a minority or racial perspective, then I think we start having better awareness as providers of care around what exactly the challenges are and how to effectively create programs and services for those people.
Cody Gardner, what do you think about Stephen's comment there that can we get to a point where understanding of differences is almost ingrained and it doesn't require extensive training? And hopefully, obviously, it would create a world with less anxiety for people in the LGBTQ community about healthcare.
Right, I hope so. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. I can only speak from my personal perspective, but I do know some of the residents that we have in the new medical students at U of R, and I've seen a change from my personal perspective, and they're much more interested in being engaged with the LGBT community and being supportive of them. They want to know how they can help. And that's only from my personal perspective, of course. But I mean, I share the same hope that listener has is that one day we'll get to that point where it becomes more normalized.
And maybe before we get there, we need more normalization, to use the Toadies term, in the American media. We also have to get to a point where it's not like a story, you know, Finding Nemo sequel, Finding Dory. I think Dory has a lesbian relationship is what I'm reading. And it was like a headline the other day, like, wow, Dory's got a lesbian partner in Finding Dory. And I was like, oh, cool. But, you know, it's still a story. It's a thing. And so before it's normalized, real normalization, Cody, has to mean that that's not a thing anymore, right? I'm just saying it's still a thing.
Yeah, it's a great perspective. And I am still shocked when I see love stories between lesbian couples or gay couples on television. So, I mean, even for me, just being part of a society that is so distant from that kind of relationship, you can kind of understand where this, where it comes from.
You're shocked because you just don't see it very often?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Right. So, and by the way, if I'm wrong about Dory, somebody correct me. I thought I saw that headline the other day. But anyway, the point being, so that still surprises you, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what happens when you grow up in this kind of culture. But that's a different. I think that's a different topic. Yeah,
yeah. Emily, what do you think?
I want to talk a little bit about this trauma issue that you were talking about. There's a group of people that are my age, and that's over 60, by the way. Who were brought up in a time under something called the DSM-3, which made homosexuality a significant disease that could be treated with electroshock therapy to get rid of it. It was something to be gotten rid of. And these people now are becoming... they're coming into a time where they need care. They need care at home. And they are actually afraid of inviting people in to care for them because of the trauma and stigma that they faced when they were young. And this they know that people over the age of 65, 30% of them won't ask for health care. And in a heterosexual community, that might be 20% of the people or less. So this is difficult dealing with this group of people who have been out for some period of time, are now going back into the closet to get their health care. And so that's going to affect them when their partner wants to come and visit them or friends, and it's going to be very uncomfortable and create significant issues. And they probably won't ask for the care.
But what can we do about that?
Well, we can educate the home care providers, as HCR Home Care did. They created an entire LGBTQ team, mm-hmm. so that this team is culturally competent, can go in, ask the right questions, and not offend or make the people feel uncomfortable. But one team is certainly not enough. We have to have doctors and advocates, their friends, that are able to guide them to places like Trillium for their care. Take them there for their care, so that they will get it and feel comfortable.
We recently saw Dr. Bill Valenti, Governor Andrew Cuomo, issue an executive order to prohibit therapy, anti-gay therapy to minors, so-called pray away the gay therapy. Right. That's why when I see Stephen's tweet, you know, can we in the next generation, can we get to a point where we don't need education of medical staff on dealing with LGBTQ issues, which is a really well-intended tweet. It's a really sweet thought that we could be there. But we still have executive orders on pray away the gay in 2016. I mean, it still feels like we're a long way from where we may eventually end up.
We are, but look at where we were prior to Stonewall in the 50s and 60s. People were not only invisible, they were underground. And people talked in code so that they wouldn't be discriminated against or arrested. So, relatively speaking, we've certainly made progress, because we're talking about same-sex relationships on television programs. We're here today. We have more room to grow? Absolutely. On the other hand, I think an executive order every now and then helps move things along a little faster.
Certainly not. I mean, so, I understand. What I'm saying is, we need that? I mean, it's really...
I guess we do. And the idea is, I think, to build on that to advance the understanding. There's no agenda here. It's understanding and equality. We believe in, at Trillium Health, equality for all, healthcare for all.
I that word agenda hasn't come up in a while, but one of my favorite writers, I just for some reason watched this segment the other day. David Rakoff was my favorite, and he died at the age of 47 in 2012. And 10 years ago, he was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and he said, it's still amazing that people think there's a gay agenda. And he's like, you know, people think it's, you know, attack children, you know, all the, like, you know, he's going down this list. He was being sort of flippant and humorous about it, but it's amazing that I guess if you are in the pray away the gay thing, that you might think there's still an agenda. Though I guess I thought we were past a lot of that. So I'm not saying I disagree with you, Bill. Sometimes an executive order may be necessary. I'm just saying that may be a sign that we're a long way away from where Stephen thinks maybe we can get to. So let me go ahead and grab a phone call, starting with Jack in Rochester. Go ahead, Jack.
Hello, Evan.
Yes.
Yeah, I was listening to your program, and you're talking about how long it's going to take for normalization, or at least the toning down of the concern about LGBTQ community, but a lot of this is still being, at least the problems of it against them are still being preached from the pulpits of many denominations, and I hadn't heard you touch on that. I know it's a touchy subject, but I just wanted to weigh in with that, and we can only hope that some of that rhetoric and preaching will die down in the future.
Jack, thanks for the phone call. Who wants to take this? Graham, go ahead.
I'll comment on this from the perspective of, I think we are seeing bigger societal changes. wherein if we look at the millennial generation, there's a much greater acceptance in the millennial generation of gays and lesbians and bisexuals and transgender people. It is more of a non-issue. There's more normalization, I think, within that group of young people that are, you know, a big cohort. They're a larger group demographically than the baby boomers. And, you know, they're in their 20s and 30s now and are growing in their influence. Concurrently, we also see kind of a step away from organized religion. And so to the caller's point, I think there is still from the pulpit messages in certain churches around gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and queer individuals that's not positive. There are other churches at the same time that are very positive and that have accepted and embraced the gay community at large. So I think, you know, the sands are shifting here. Perhaps not as rapidly as we'd like, but truly it's more of a generational change that's occurring instead of small increments.
Emily, you agree with that?
To some extent, yes. I truly believe in his comments about the millennials. But we do know that there were 205 anti-LGBT bills introduced this in the last 6 months in the legislatures.
Across the country.
Across the country. Yeah. This, I believe, is a reaction to marriage. So they're doing this all based on religious freedom and the need to be able to carry out whatever they need to carry out based on their beliefs. So I believe it will calm down, personally. But right now, it's a significant backlash, like in any movement. And I am very, very hopeful, as Graham said, that the millennials will actually lead this change.
Thanks to Jin on Twitter for helping correct me. It's always nice when, see, as a host who prides myself on doing a lot of research, I shouldn't speak out of school, but Jin is saying, from what she saw, it's not Dory in a lesbian relationship, but there is a couple pushing a baby carriage, a same-sex couple pushing a baby carriage in a single scene. So it's not the main character. Maybe that's the next generation. but there, thank you, Jin. Thank you for that. And here's a question from a listener named Tim. He says, probably a dumb question, but I always knew what LGBT means. Can your guests explain how queer is different from gay? I feel like I should have prefaced this question by saying I'm an open-minded straight male. I think I speak for many others who don't want to offend anyone, but just want to know what the Q means.
I guess I'll answer that. So Q, in general terms, it means queer. And it's sort of like an overarching term for all of the rest of the alphabet soup. When, you know, which we use in times where we want to save space, basically. Because we have like A's and I's and all that kind of thing. So queer is just sort of like, it's a new kind of general category for people that don't really fit into the L, G, B, or T. They might be gender nonconforming. They might be questioning, unsure of like what label they want to identify as. Pansexual is becoming a very popular label that people are taking. So queer just serves as an easy way to include the rest of the folks in our community.
Okay. Anyone want to add to that? It's a pretty good description there. Sounds good. Okay. Bill?
What that does is it also moves us away from what we've called the gender binary of you're either male or female. And it's not that way because we're talking about a spectrum in terms of gender identity.
Okay. And so Cody's explanation should clear up the confusion that queer doesn't just mean gay or doesn't just mean LGB. It means something different. Also, does the term queer indicate taking back something that used to be a pejorative, Cody?
Exactly. Yeah? That's exactly true. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Dr. Valenti, I want to make sure we ask you about some of the other work that Trillium's doing, including a merger with MoCA. Is that
yes.
Right? So what is MoCA, first of all?
The MoCA Center is a community group that focuses on the health of LGBT people of color. So we're looking at another marginalized population and merged with that group. The goal there is to really begin to tailor our outreach, education, other activities that begin to get people of color, LGBTQ people of color, into healthcare. And the in addition to that, I have more good news, and that is I'm overseeing that activity now. So
I didn't know that.
I am indeed. And the idea is to really begin to pay attention to getting people into healthcare. But one of the things that I've learned, and you know, as I get older, I keep thinking I know it all, and I don't, because I'm learning about the cultural differences in people of color that are not my usual white bread kind of existence that say, you have insurance, come into care. It doesn't work that way. There are additional cultural kinds of biases, whether it's family, religious, income, or racial tension that keep people out of care. So again, a new program, new approach, because each group is a little bit different in terms of what it's going to take, but we're going to give it a try because Black African-American men who have sex with men are at a significantly higher risk of HIV infection. So if we just focus on HIV, we have several more years of work.
We could, and we have talked HIV prevention. We've talked PrEP and, right. and so many other things, but maybe that is a good segue as we get toward our final 5 minutes. Dr. Valenti, what are the most significant areas that we still need progress in the LGBTQ community for healthcare? What stands out to you at the top of that list? And I'll go around the table. I'll start with you, Bill.
Quickly, getting into care, HIV prevention, sexual health, paying attention to sexual health, behavioral mental health care. Big, big themed areas. We address all of them, but we need to get out there and bring more people into care, get the message out there.
All right, so it sounds like just, again, providing culturally competent care is almost the first step to at least bringing more people in, feeling safe.
Right.
Yep. Emily, what do you think?
I think that lesbians need to get care earlier. They seem to just decide they're not going to get anything. They don't need to go have mammograms because they're not going to get cancer. They're not going to have children. So they just sort of sit back and don't go to the doctors.
Do we know why?
Well, they just don't feel like they're at risk. And they have a very high incidence of cardiovascular disease.
Okay. So I guess that's fixing that starts with more outreach, more, I mean, what do you do? More education?
Yeah, you talk to them in different venues.
Bill, were you nodding along with that? You agree with that point?
Oh, yeah.
Lesbians tend to
Our program for lesbian women, we've just started to scratch the surface. That is another area of development. More good news, though. I'm overseeing that initiative.
Is there anything you're not doing? I mean, you got nothing to do.
That's why they call it innovation. So everything else.
But in a very serious way, yeah. I had mentioned earlier, Trillium has a goal of increasing services for women, and this is exactly what we're talking about,
yep.
isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. Cody, what do you see as the biggest sort of need in the LGBTQ community's healthcare?
Well, from my personal perspective, I didn't realize what a benefit it is to have a relationship with your doctor that you see all the time, and the kinds of things that your doctor may bring up to you as far as prevention or just in general health. That kind of relationship building is so critical to have the best kind of health outcomes, especially for our community. And I think a lot of gay men in particular don't feel that kind of relationship with their providers, and they typically don't go very often for, you know, stigma and other reasons. One of the things that Trillium does really well is connecting the PrEP program to primary care. So gay men will come to Trillium for access to PrEP, and along with that, they can transition into having a primary care doctor that they can relate to and build a relationship with over time.
When we think about how little time we feel like we all have with our doctors, no matter what our own background, I think we all feel a little squeezed for time. Hmm. How we all feel like when the actual doctor walks into the room, you go, I've got to get 10 questions out because when's the next time I'm going to have this opportunity? And maybe we feel less population-wide, we probably feel less of a relationship with our doctors. Just imagine how much more important it is for the LGBTQ community based on what Cody has been telling us and what our panel's been telling us about needing that feeling of relationship building and safety. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, a great point. Graham, what do you see as a big prong, big need?
Well, I think I would just kind of build on what Cody just said. I think integrated behavioral and mental health in a primary care setting really at the end of the day is going to be how we're going to help address that access issue. So to the point you just made, there's a challenge across the United States in terms of access to care. The number of primary care providers, the availability of those physicians to serve a large cohort of patients is being reduced. People aren't moving into primary care as medical practice. And so creating a team-based care model that really has a multidisciplinary team that are all known to the patient, that all have relationship with the person that's getting care, and can address in an integrated way their various care needs. Because not in every situation do you need somebody with a medical degree to advance you to your next stage of your care plan. You may, in fact, be better served by a care coordinator or care manager, behavioral health, or some other social support. And so I think that's where we're seeing the evolution of the healthcare system. And, you know, Trillium Health is really a great case in point in understanding that model and advancing that integrated care delivery system.
Well, here's to seeing the Health Equality Index add more institutions across the country. And as you heard Emily Jones say earlier, a lot of progress has been made in the last 5 to 10 years, but there's still a ways to go. And a big event coming up 2 Saturdays from now. That is Saturday, June 11th, the White Party. Are you going to be there, Dr. Valenti?
Absolutely.
If everybody's ever wanted to party with Bill Valenti, he's got one of the great radio voices in Rochester. This is your night, the White Party. It supports not only Trillium Health, but the work that they do with their patient care fund that helps ensure access to affordable health care for all and addresses many of these issues that we have been talking about. Dr. Valenti, thank you.
Pleasure.
We'll see you there. Emily Jones, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Cody Gardner, nice to see you as well. And Graham Brown, thank you, Graham. Thanks for listening. Daprina, our intern, great work today. Cat Schwartz, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you on a Friday.